This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. We've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio, a variety of old-time radio for you. We're going to start off this week with Cabin B-13, a series that was actually spawned from an episode of Suspense of the same name. The episode we're going to hear is titled The Bride Vanishes. It first aired December 12th, 1948. And it's a quick, incredible, but true, and two heads are better. We'll finish off with David Harding Counterspy in the case of the spectrograph from December 3rd, 1950.
Tonight, from his notebooks of the strange and sinister, Dr. Fabian tells you the story of The Bride Vanishes.
Terror doesn't strike only in dark places. There, on the sunlit, fabulously beautiful Isle of Capri, one woman had already vanished without a trace. And they warned Lucy Courtney, the lovely young American bride, that she looked too much like the other woman, that the terror would again strike from nowhere on that balcony of death. Would you have dared to step out upon that balcony alone as Lucy did?
CBS brings you another strange and incredible tale of mystery and murder by the world-famous best-selling mystery writer, John Dixon Carr, directed by John Dietz. Now, here's Mr. Carr's famous Dr. Fabian to tell you his tale, The Bride Vanishes.
Blue water, a dazzle under the sun. Behind you, the bone-white beaches, and Vesuvius, dull purple, in a heat haze. And the island of Capri, 20 miles out across the Bay of Naples. As I bade goodbye to Tom and Lucy Courtney on the deck of the Mauravania, I wished I were going with them to Capri. I didn't hear the story of the horrible events which befell them until we returned to Naples again, a story that began soon after they boarded the small harbor steamer that chugs across the bay toward Capri.
It's the most perfect place for a honeymoon, Tom.
Oh, it's heaven. With you along, Lucy, I'll become the best painter in the world in less than 2 weeks.
Well, I hope you'll take some time off for me.
Don't worry, darling. There'll be lots of time for us. Even with all the colors in the world at hand. Even with all the fascinating models available here in Italy.
If you ever have another model but me, I'll scratch your eyes out. I'm warning you, Tom.
Listen, dear. Do you honestly like it here in Italy?
I like Naples. I love the way they run around singing Neapolitan songs to each other. And I like the color and the sailboats and the little lights going up Vesuvius at night. Only...
You shivered. What's wrong?
Ever since we got aboard this little steamer, people have been staring at me, Tom.
Oh, I can't blame them for that.
No, no, I mean in a funny way. Even your American friend, what's his name?
Granger?
Mr. Granger. When you introduced him to me at Naples, well, I thought his eyes were going to pop out.
Shh. He's standing over by the rail now. He lives at Capri.
Why does he persist in wearing that white 10-gallon hat here in Italy?
You know, before Granger made money in oil wells, he was a real old-fashioned cowpuncher. And he's proud of it. Good fellow, too.
Well, he's too polite to say anything, but he keeps looking around at me.
Well?
He looks frightened.
Frightened? This isn't the time to start imagining things, Lucy.
Oh, I know. Maybe I'm just so happy, I'm afraid it can't last.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, but wouldn't it be awful if something did happen, Tom, and we weren't together any longer?
Hey, wait a minute. Hasn't our ship stopped?
Oh, yes, I hadn't noticed.
Seems a funny place to stop. No sign of a harbor, only rocks and little gray cliffs. Oh, Mr. Granger. Mr. Granger.
Yes, young fella?
Do you happen to know why we're stopping here?
Well, that's an easy one, son. We're stopping so that you and your good lady and anybody else who's curious can get a look at the Blue Grotto.
The Blue Grotto? Where is it, Mr. Granger?
Shade your eyes with your hand, ma'am. You see that tiny little arch under the cliff?
Yes.
And all the little white rowboats coming out toward us?
Yes.
Now, when the first boat comes alongside, you climb down that iron ladder and get in. The boatman will row you out and through the arch into the grotto. It's a great, big, dark cavern. The water in there looks as though it's lit up underneath with blue fire.
Would you like to go out and see it, Lucy?
I'd love to.
Well, let me give you a little tip, Mrs. Courtney. The current's pretty fast out there. You'll go shooting under that arch like 60.
Oh, are we likely to upset?
No. But the arch isn't as high as your head. When you see it coming, lie back flat in the boat. That is, unless you want your head knocked off.
Thanks, Mr. Granger. We'll remember. See you later. Easy on the ladder, Lucy. Don't look around yet.
I'm all right, darling. I'm just as good a swimmer as you are.
I'm in the boat now. Take one more step.
All right.
Steady. Now, turn around facing the boatman and sit down here beside me.
Oh.
All right, boatman.
Corrent, hold the buck.
Tom, what's the matter with the boatman?
Hey, easy, man. Do you want to upset us? Sit down.
You come back, yes?
Come back? Well, I've never been here before in my life.
Push off, man. Start rowing. The other boats are piling up behind you.
You come back.
Start rowing, can't you? Andale subito. Basta.
Tom, he can't take his eyes off us.
I wish he'd watch out where he's rowing.
You come to live at the Villa Borghese, yes?
Tom, how does he know that?
This lady, she's not dead.
Dead? Of course she's not dead. What are you talking about?
She never come to Capri before?
Never.
Then I tell you, she will disappear just like the other one.
Disappear?
See. I rest on my oars, I tell you.
Tom, aren't we moving rather fast?
Yes, that's the entrance to the grotto ahead.
I tell you, there was a lady so much like you. For the bark, it scared me.
Look, old man, I don't want to teach you your business, but you've got your back to that grotto.
Take this lady back where she come from. Don't take her to village of Borghese.
Down, Lucy. The current's taking us into the grotto. Flat on your back, down.
Senora, I'm sorry. I almost make you to get hurt.
You know you nearly got your own head knocked off.
Excuse me, no, I'm used. Now, I will row you around the Blue Grotto.
I don't think I like it much, Tom.
Neither do I.
It's dark, except for that blue light under the water. It's transparent. You can see the fishes swimming.
Just a minute, boatman. This lady who disappeared from the Villa Borghese...
2-3 years ago, she disappeared.
You say she looked exactly like my wife?
Si, senor. She was going to be married. She was trying on, wedding dress. Her mother and sisters, they was in the room with her. She walked out on a balcony over the sea. You know what I mean by balcony over the sea. And nobody ever hear of her again.
You mean she jumped over into the sea?
Oh, young girl, they're going to be married to kill herself? No.
Then what did happen?
Senor, I do not know. But sometimes they say you can meet her ghost in here. She float just under the water where you can see her. and it turned over and over. And the wedding veil is still around her face.
Tom, let's get out of here.
You want to go, yes?
Lucy, if this fellow is stringing us along...
He is not stringing us along.
Then somebody ought to know what this means. If we've inherited a haunted balcony where people disappear like soap bubbles, I say it's too much. Let's get back to our steamer and talk to Granger.
Mr. Granger! Mr. Granger!
I'm aboard, ma'am. You too, young fella. The ship's starting in half a second.
Give me a hand, Lucy.
Yes, dear. Oh, didn't anyone else go to the Blue Grotto?
Well, ma'am, no. The other boatman refused to take them after they saw you and Mr. Courtney go. I'm sorry,
It's all right. We've just heard the story.
I ought to have told you about it myself. All the way out here, I've been cussing myself and thinking what an ornery old badger I am for not telling you when I first met you in Naples.
The girl did vanish then?
By a first-rate miracle, yes. In broad daylight, within 20 feet of her mother and sisters.
You don't look like a man who'd believe in miracles, Mr. Granger.
I'm not, son. I'm just telling you what happened.
But why is everybody so excited? Somebody must have thrown her off the balcony.
Josephine Adams was all alone on a balcony 40 feet up a cliff, smooth as glass. She didn't fall, and she wasn't thrown, because there was no sound of a splash. And she didn't come back from the balcony, because her mother and sisters were in front of the only door. Yet within 15 seconds... 15 seconds, mind you. She just vanished.
You believe that?
Sure, I believe it, son. It's a fact.
Did you know the girl's family?
Very well. We got a real English-speaking colony here. We're pulling in. About a half a minute now, I'm going to show you your new home.
Oh, can you see it from the deck here?
You sure can, ma'am. It's on the edge of the cliff. Professor Davis's house on one side of it, and my shack's on the other. That's why I want to ask you a question.
Well, of course. Ask anything you like.
I'm an old stager, ma'am. Not exactly up to high-toned society around here, but... You trust me?
Yes, I think so.
Then promise me something. Unless you're with somebody you do trust, keep away from that balcony.
Do you honestly think there's danger?
I don't know, son. If I did, I wouldn't have to talk this way.
That sounds like a dog barking. I thought I heard it before.
It is, a big police dog. And led by a very handsome woman, if you ask me.
Oh, Lord, I didn't know she was aboard.
Who?
The Countess. She lives in our colony.
Why, she looks like an American. You take your eyes off her, Tom Courtney.
She is an American. Married a Count Parcheesi or something like that. Just call her Nellie.
My dear Harry Granger.
Hello, Nellie.
It's true. Everybody told me so, but I couldn't believe it until I saw her. She does look exactly like poor Josephine Adams. Just as small, just as dainty.
Please, is everybody trying to give me the jitters?
Nellie, I want you to meet some friends of mine.
Oh, you don't need to introduce me. I know who they are. You're the nice young couple who've taken that villa. I'm Nellie Lucchese, and this is my dog, Tiberius. Named after the wicked Roman emperor, you know, who used to live at Capri. I must confess, I'm terribly fascinated by wicked things. Aren't you, Mr. Courtney?
Lucy, stop kicking me in the ribs. I haven't done anything.
No, and you're not going to.
But Tiberius seems to have taken quite a fancy to you, Mrs. Courtney. I've never known him to go up to a stranger before.
Well, I only wish I could borrow him. He might be a charm against... Oh, I don't know.
We'll be at the harbor in a few minutes. Then you must let me drive you up to the villa. You won't be able to get any servants, I'm afraid, because they won't stay here. But you can camp out. Oh, look. Look, there's your villa. We're passing it now.
Oh, where?
On the cliff where I'm pointing.
Hey, wait a minute. There must be some mistake. That's not the Villa Borghese.
It sure is, son.
But that's a palace. Like all the other houses there. And I rented it furnished for about $25 a month.
Can't you guess why you got it so cheap, son? If you take my advice, you'll turn around and go back to Naples for the next steamer.
Oh, Harry Granger, don't be an idiot. Let's have some excitement.
Tom, it is beautiful.
Yeah. Too infernally beautiful, if you ask me.
Oh, there's the balcony.
Well, it's all right but daylight. Marble and tapestries. But at night, when you've got to put out the lights, and you start thinking about what happened there, you...
The moon over Capri makes a deathly daylight. You could actually see to read on that balcony if anyone should go out there. Frosted glass doors open out on it from a big room on the ground floor. And two deliberately calm persons and a dog sit looking at one another.
Lucy, stop it.
Stop what?
Stop looking over at that balcony.
I'm sorry, darling.
Why are we sitting here anyway? There's an inner room that's much more comfortable.
It's like having a toothache, Tom. A very little toothache.
I may be dense, Angel, but I don't follow you.
Well, you put your tongue against the tooth to see if it'll hurt. You know it will hurt, but you go on doing it just the same. That's us.
And maybe you're right.
Oh, Tom, did you ever think we'd have a lovely house like this?
Well, the house is all right, yes. And then they have to go and spoil everything. Our honeymoon with this blasted Tommy around about...
Oh, please, Tom, you're just as jittery now as I was this afternoon. Why, even Tiberius is jittery.
Yeah, I guess I am. Easy, boy, easy.
Well, there's whiskey on the table. They call it Vicky here. Mix yourself a drink.
In a minute, not just now. Lucy, there's nothing wrong with that balcony. Suppose you walked out on it this minute.
I've had a horrible longing to try it. Just because I know I shouldn't.
Well, nothing could attack you. All you'd have to do would be yell. That would bring Granger out on his balcony like a shot. And the neighbor on the other side of us would... Who is on the other side, by the way?
A brain specialist.
A what?
A specialist in brain disorders. Professor Davis. He's English.
Somebody in the inner room. Easy, Tiberius, easy.
Tom, I'm afraid.
It's all right. You hold Tiberius's collar while I open the door.
Here, boy.
We don't want him to fly at anybody. We're going into the other room and stay there. You ready?
Yes.
Good evening, Mr. Courtney. Good evening, Mrs. Courtney. I am no ghost, though you appear to regard me as one. I am merely your neighbor, Professor Rutherford Davis.
Oh, yes, of course. Mr. Granger mentioned you.
I trust you will pardon this intrusion. No one answered my knock, so I ventured to come in.
Oh, it's no intrusion, Professor Davis. We're a little disorganized here, that's all.
Oh, naturally. Mr. Courtney, I wish I could say welcome to Capri, but I have a very different message.
Well?
If you value Mrs. Courtney's life, you'll go back to Naples immediately.
Not you, too.
I do not say that as a ghost hunter, sir. I say it as a specialist. May I sit down?
Oh, of course. Please do.
Thank you.
Well, we seem to be forgetting our manners, Professor Davis. Will you have a drink?
Thank you. Perhaps a small whiskey.
I'll get it, darling. You sit down and talk to Professor Davis.
You're not going back into that room alone.
I'm only going to get the drinks, Tom. And I promise to be good. Tiberius can come with me, can't you, Tiberius?
Oh, I see. You've borrowed Tiberius from the Countess Lucchese.
Yes, she was kind enough to offer him. If you gentlemen will excuse me, I'll be back in just a minute. Come on, Tiberius.
I hope this is all right, Professor.
No, sir, it is not all right. Your wife is in very great danger, sir.
But why? Because of that balcony?
No, because she looks exactly like the late Josephine Adams.
I don't get it.
Mr. Courtney, did you ever hear of paranoia?
It's some kind of mental disease, isn't it?
Yes. The paranoid begins by imagining that he or she is being persecuted by someone. Persecuted by the most unlikely and harmless kind of person, as a rule. First, he hears things. A voice in his brain whispers, "You'll be killed, you'll be killed, you'll be killed." He hears it in the tick of a clock, in the rattle of a train, in the footsteps on a street. There are holes in the walls through which his enemy is always watching. Invisible speaking tubes bring him messages. There are pains in his joints and nightmares of attempts to poison him. His brain bursts and he kills, he kills, he kills. Oh, excuse me for speaking so strongly.
How does this affect us?
Mr. Courtney, will you examine the sheet of paper?
What is it?
The fragment of a typewritten diary. I found it on the cliffs months ago. Don't ask me who wrote it, but I know that a criminal lunatic on this island imagined that poor, inoffensive Josephine Adams was his enemy. So he killed her.
Killed her? How?
I don't know.
And what happened to the girl's body?
I'm not a detective, sir. The body was carried out to sea, perhaps, or washed along the cliffs and into the Blue Grotto to be lost. But don't you understand the danger to your wife?
You're not suggesting
to somebody's cracked brain, your wife is Josephine Adams created all over again.
Kill Lucy? What couldn't be done?
It was done, my friend. Listen.
That sounded like a dog howling.
Miss Courtney is rather a long time in getting that whiskey.
She wouldn't go near the balcony. She promised not to go out on the balcony.
People do very perverse things, my friend, but they know they shouldn't.
Lucy! Lucy!
That seems to be Tiberius out on the balcony. I can't see anything else from here.
She's gone! She's gone! She's gone!
An empty balcony, a howling dog, and a sea turned clear silver under the moon. That was how it was pictured to me with such intolerable vividness that I seemed to have lived through it. Then, after the tumult and the shouting, there are other pictures. Don't you hear the noise of that motor launch with a half-demented young man at the wheel? Three other familiar figures are gathered round it. Don't you recognize the white 10-gallon hat of Harry Granger and the neat pointed beard of Professor Davis and the brunette prettiness of Nellie Lucchese?
But what on earth is he going to do?
I'd like to know that one myself.
Listen, please, all of you.
Take it easy, son. We're with you.
What time is it?
Time?
Yes, what time is it?
It's 2:30 in the morning, going on for 3.
12 hours. Then the tide ought to be just where it was this afternoon.
What's the tide got to do with it?
A whole lot. Somebody set a trap and made Lucy fall off that balcony. I know it.
Oh, that's absurd.
If Lucy's been carried out to sea, there's nothing we can do about it. But if she's been carried along with the current and into the Blue Grotto...
The Blue Grotto?
One moment, sir. You're not proposing to run this big launch under that arch after dark?
Yes, Professor, that's just exactly it. Oh,
go on, do it. I'll back you up. Let's have some excitement.
It will be exciting enough, I assure you. Mr. Courtney, have you got some wild hope of recovering your wife's body?
I've even got a wild hope she may be alive. Lucy's a very strong swimmer.
You're acting like a nut, son.
Get set, everybody. I'm going to swing around.
Current now, better hold tight.
I've got to duck my own head when we go through. Everybody else flop down.
I still protest against this. Don't you understand, Mr. Courtney?
Get ready. Here we go.
What on earth's wrong? There's no Blue Grotto. It's black as pitch.
My dear Nellie, I kept trying to tell all of you. The Blue Grotto effect is caused by the sun's rays. There never is one except when the sun is out. Just how does our friend propose to find anything in here?
Oh, something's got hold of the boat. I heard it move.
There's a hand there. A wet hand. Lucy.
She's out alive.
Mr. Granger, help me lift her up over the side. Right, easy. Don't tip the boat.
Lucy. Lucy, darling. Are you all right?
Tom. Tom.
Are you all right, Lucy? Can you hear me?
All right. I'm just exhausted. I got in here. Couldn't swim out against the current.
Well, don't try to talk.
Got to talk. Going to faint. Tom. Who's with you?
Only our friends.
Who's with you? Is the murderer with you?
A pleasant prospect to be shut up in the dark at 3 o'clock in the morning with a criminal unity.
Who's hope then?
Lucy, don't hold me so tight. Let go, dear. I'll get the boat started and have you out of here in just a second.
Who spoke then?
Only Professor Davis.
Tom. Tom. I've got to tell you. You know that girl, Josephine Adams, died. Almost killed me.
Has anybody here got some brandy? Or a flashlight?
I have a flashlight, my friend. Will you allow me as a medical man to examine Mrs. Corcoran?
I'd better keep back for Josephine, Professor. She's hysterical. Give me the flashlight.
I walked into other room. No one with me. All alone except Tiberius.
Yes, Lucy.
Somebody called my name from the balcony, I thought. Very soft. Mrs. Courtney. He said, Mrs. Courtney.
Did you recognize the voice?
Yes. That's why I went.
Hadn't you better start up this boat and get out of here?
Oh, Spokane.
Don't pay any attention to them, Lucy. Nobody can hurt you now.
I went out on the balcony. Bright moonlight. Bright as day. There was nobody there.
Nobody on the balcony?
No. I looked out over the sea, and something came at me, Tom. Something flew out of the air and came at me.
Just one moment before Mrs. Courtney goes on. Is anybody in this boat carrying a revolver?
Not that I know of.
Excuse my mentioning it, but I felt something metal brush past my hand.
It was only the flashlight, probably.
Will you please let Lucy go on and finish? Lucy, you were on the balcony, and something came at you.
Yes, yes. Like a snake, sideways, out of the air. It went over my head, fastened round my neck. It was a rope with a noose in it.
A rope?
That's it, a rope. It was thrown from another balcony. I'm small and light like Josephine Adams, and it pulled me sideways over the rail, and I fell.
Take it easy now, darling. You're perfectly safe.
Is she perfectly safe?
The murderer. He let her fall on the rope. But the rope was jerked tight long before she struck the water. That broke her neck. And the murderer lowered it softly.
So there wasn't any splash.
No.
And the current took her away, rope and all.
That's it. It would have happened to me, only the rope slipped through the murderer's fingers.
Through whose fingers?
Somebody in this boat has got a revolver. Who's overboard? Somebody went. Switch on that light, my friend, and shine it on the water.
All right, Professor. There's your light. Look at it. Turning over and over. The water in the blue grotto is red now.
Tom, don't come back to me.
It's all right, Lucy. I swear you're safe now.
Did he shoot himself?
Yes.
Did who shoot himself?
Who had a balcony exactly like ours on the house next door? Who began life as a carpenter and would have known how to use a lasso?
Who knew Josephine Adams well and got it into his maniac head that Mrs. Courtney was Josephine Adams all over again?
Harry Granger. Look. There's his 10-gallon hat floating away.
And so ends my story, which, while your own honeymoon may have ended, you may do well to remember next time you plan a vacation in sunny, carefree, whatever its name is. But next week, we shall find Terra lurking in a very different sort of spot. In a storm-surrounded cottage in the remote English countryside. It's the story of a girl who married a man she knew too little about. A tale of poison. And of a rat that played the accordion in a cupboard. And so, next week when I tell you this strange tale for which I use the phrase, "Till death do us part," won't you join me, Dr. Fabian, in my cabin B-13.
From cabin B-13, CBS has brought you another strange and sinister tale of mystery and murder, written by the world-famous best-selling author John Dixon Carr and directed by John Dietz. Arnold Moss is featured as Dr. Fabian, and in tonight's drama, Joseph Curtin appeared as Tom Courtney, Mary Patton played Lucy, and Rod Hendrickson was heard as Mr. Granger. The music for Cabin B-13 is composed and conducted by Alfredo Antonini. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Dr. Fabian's tale, "Till Death Do Us Part. More great drama comes to you on CBS tomorrow night and every Monday when Lux Radio Theater presents Hollywood's great stars and great plays. Tomorrow night, Monday, December 13th, Ingrid Bergman and Robert Montgomery will co-star in The Seventh Veil, a powerful drama of a girl pianist and the strange man who fostered her career and then fell in love with her. Be sure you're with CBS tomorrow, Monday night, when Ingrid Bergman and Robert Montgomery create these stirring roles for you in The Seventh Veil on Lux Radio Theater over most of these same CBS network stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Nature is whimsical and unpredictable, and sometimes in a perverse mood, she delights in creating freaks and monstrosities. But even when we remember that fact, we are still inevitably awed and bewildered by such creatures as the one that Captain Oliver found on the beach at Sorrowa Island.
For Harry Streeter, reporter on the staff of the Morning Herald, Sydney, Australia's leading newspaper, Captain Oliver's arrival in port came as a godsend.
Morning, Herald. City desk, Streeter.
Hello there. My name's Oliver. Captain Oliver. I'm captain of the trading vessel Emu. We just docked about a half hour ago. If you'll drop down to the harbour, I got something here I think you'll be interested in seeing.
A half hour later, Harry Streeter was walking along the wharf. When he came upon the Emu, a voice from the deck above greeted him heartily.
Oi there! You're the man from the newspaper?
That's right.
Well, come on board. You'll find the blooming thing lying right here on the deck.
Harry Streeter, highly skeptical of the whole affair, mounted the gangplank.
Think your piper might be interested in something like that?
Harry glanced at the deck and gasped in amazement. Lying at his feet were the bones of an animal, the most gigantic bones that any human being had ever laid eyes on. There were two skulls, each over 2 feet long, fastened together and connected to a single vertebral column. And there was a hip bone twice the size of a man.
Where in heaven's name did you find that?
Sorrowa Island, lying on the beach. The old animal was there, but we just brought back part of the skeleton.
The two heads were joined together like that when you found them?
Aye.
Well, those skulls are shaped like horses' heads. And they've got beaks on them. Have you ever heard of a beaked whale?
I've seen them.
No, you're seeing them again. Those are the bones of two beaked whales that somebody tied together.
Mr. Streeter, how big is the biggest beaked whale?
They run as long as 30 feet.
Well, this here animal measured just 60 feet from tip to tip. And what's more, his skin was covered with hair.
But Harry Streeter remained skeptical. And though he saw fit to abandon his theory that the monster was really two whales, his story in the Morning Herald the next day carried what he felt was a thoroughly scientific explanation.
To be believed, this 60-foot animal with two heads was actually alive and wandering along the shores of Sorrowa Island shortly before the captain and his crew stumbled on it. Your reporter, however, could not avoid the conclusion that what Oliver's brought back with him are nothing more nor less than fossil remains. Such an explanation would only be precluded if we were presented with the hair and skin, which the captain claims to have removed from the bones. If the animal isn't the fossil, why didn't he bring the skin back with him?
In a letter to the editor of the Morning Herald, Captain Oliver gave his reason.
If he found the skin of an animal that had been lying under the hot tropical sun for a week or two, how would he like to take it along with him in a small, crowded boat?
The issue was not settled until a certain prominent scientist issued his own statement.
The bones have been lying in my laboratory for several days. These are definitely not fossil remains.
And so the question was resolved. And it was apparent that Captain Oliver had been unjustly accused. He could only be accepted as a story incredible but true.
Counter Spy.
Washington calling David Harding, counter spy. Washington calling David Harding, counter spy.
Harding, counter spy, calling Washington.
United States counter spy.
especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
These counter-spy reports to the American people are brought to you each week at this time. Now, the case of the spectrograph.
Miss Phelps.
Yes, Mr. Blake?
When is Dr. Carthouse going to be here?
Why,
he might at least be prompt. After all, we are his financial backers.
I know, Mr. Donner.
As such, we're certainly entitled to better treatment than this.
Of course, Mr. Fulton.
Considering the fact that we've advanced close to $50,000 for his sonic research so far.
Oh, I know you have, gentlemen.
Now look, Miss Phelps, have you any idea where he is?
Well, probably at Columbus Circle, 59th Street and Broadway.
Oh, no, not again.
More speeches?
Well, Dr. Carthouse was feeling very good when he left here, and as you know, he usually makes speeches when he feels good.
Yes, flowery ones, too. Although you'd never guess it from the way he talks normally. Abrupt, to the point.
Well, I'm not going to have my dignity trifled with any longer. If the doctor doesn't show up in 5 minutes, I'm going to consider the money I've invested so far in that nincompoop lost. And you and Blake can carry on with the financing if you're mad enough to do so.
Now, Fulton, don't be...
No, I mean it, Blake. I've had enough.
What?
Gladys, you should have been there. I made a great speech. A crowd of 30 people. I told them what I thought of the government. They were impressed.
Doctor, your appointment...
Oh, I see. All licking your chops, eh?
That's what I mean, Blake. Now, see here, Doctor. I'm a man of some importance in the banking world. I demand that I be treated with a measure of respect.
Respect? You get that for brains, not money. There are no brains here except mine. And Gladys.
By heaven, I'm...
Now, calm down, Fulton.
Let's at least see what the doctor has to show us.
Yes. Now, Dr. Carthouse, you promised us a demonstration of how far your sonic research had progressed.
I keep my promises. Wait till I set up the laboratory, you'll see. Give me 5 minutes.
Four waiting.
It won't be long, Mr. Fulton.
Give them some reading matter, Gladys, to keep them busy. Something not too difficult. Comic books. Good. All set. Come in and see.
It's about time.
This had better be good, Carthouse.
I'm sure it will be, gentlemen.
Gladys, you come too. You've never seen this.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Carthouse.
Close the door. All right, gentlemen. Sit down.
Yes. Let's see this.
Good. Now, first, a preliminary demonstration. See this table backed by thick wood planks? I take this glass tumbler and put it on the table in front of the planks. You follow me?
We have brains enough for that.
I'm surprised. Now, here, this thing which looks like a radio. It produces sound waves with tremendous frequencies. It's made of, you wouldn't understand. Just call it a sound box. Now, see this hole in front of the sound box. It sends out directional sound waves. Listen. Watch. There. See? Your ears hurt?
I can barely hear now.
Yes, but what of it, Dr. Carthouse? Shattering a glass is nothing new. A good, robust voice can do it, just holding a note long enough.
Right, Blake. I showed you that for contrast with the real demonstration which is coming now. Gladys.
Yes, Doctor.
Brush the glass off the table.
Yes, sir.
Now, the three of you, look at this. A steel tube. Go on, take it. Pass it around.
Here then.
3/4-inch steel. Armor plate.
No question about it.
Now, Fulton, be useful. Put the steel tube where the glass was.
Like this?
Right. I didn't think you were so smart, Fulton.
I will not tolerate...
Oh, shut up, Fulton. Go on, Dr. Carthouse.
There's nothing more to say, Blake. Just listen. Watch again.
What's the matter?
Something go wrong, Doctor?
No, the sound waves which are sent out now are too high for your ears to hear. Just watch the steel tube.
Good.
It's incredible.
What did it?
Sound waves. The demonstration is finished.
Yes, but what did it? How did you attain a frequency that can shatter steel?
How soon can we put this to practical use? Why didn't it shatter those planks behind the steel tube?
The planks have a higher degree of elasticity. They can absorb the sound waves. Steel is brittle. It can't. I'm working on a frequency to shatter wood now.
This is frightening, shattering armor plate like that.
If this is developed on an industrial scale, there'll be plenty of practical use for it.
Hmm. Blake, I'm concerned with the war potential of a thing like this.
Yes, Fulton's right. I think we should seek government protection for Dr. Carthouse.
Government protection?
Well, the plans and the formula for this device shouldn't be left unguarded wherever they are.
The plans and the formula are here, in my head, where nobody can steal them. I don't like interference from my backers or government. I won't stand for snooping, prying.
Now, be reasonable, Dr.
No, I won't be. My feelings are clear. Jefferson said it best. Society in its worst state is a blessing. Government in its best state is a necessary evil. I must be free to work. No interference from you or the government. Take it or leave it.
Of all...
That doesn't give us much choice.
No.
Well, then... Go on as it is.
And good night. Come on, gentlemen. Let's find an atmosphere of sanity.
Good night.
Good night, Mr.
Good night. Ruffled their fur. I'm glad. It'll teach them that the brains are important. I feel good. Like a speech.
It's late, Dr.
Oh, Carhouse. Don't worry. I'm not going to make one. It's good to be independent. Remember that, Gladys. Good night. I'm going to bed. You straighten things up.
I will, Doctor. Long distance? I'd like to place a call to Washington, D.C., the headquarters of the United States Scouter Pies.
Hello? Yes, this is Sergei. Oh, hello. You sound very excited. Undoubtedly, this is a request for more money, eh? Really? And what is this miracle Dr. Carthouse has done? Yes, yes, I'm listening. Go on. So, armor plate. Interesting if true. But you need more money. No. None. My dear sir, my government... my client feels he has paid enough without results. No. No. If what you say is true, obtain the formula and plans. How? That I leave to your imagination. Get them to me and you will receive the final agreed upon sum, $100,000. Yes. Just send them by a commercial messenger. In this business, the most ordinary means of transmission is usually the safest. I'll be expecting to hear from you. Good night, sir.
Yes, what is it, Peters?
Mr. Harding, there's a call from New York for you, a Miss Gladys Phelps, about a Dr. Semyon Carthouse.
Oh, my gosh, not him again.
What's that, Chief?
Well, never mind. Put the call on my line, then call Bowling Field and tell him to get the jet plane ready for a trip. Then come in here yourself. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Miss Phelps?
Yes, is this Mr. Harding?
Yes, it is. You're calling about Dr. Semyon Carthouse?
Yes, Mr. Harding. I work with him.
Yes, go on, Miss Phelps.
Well, Dr. Carthouse has just concluded a rather terrifying demonstration in the field of sonic power. I think he should be protected for his own sake.
Oh, does he know you're calling me?
Oh, no, sir.
I thought not.
The doctor's a bit eccentric.
Yes, that's a mild word, Miss Phelps. You don't have to explain. I've had dealings with him before.
Well, then you understand he must know nothing of this. I thought perhaps that you could send an agent.
Hold it, Peter. Oh, Miss Phelps.
Yes?
I'll come up to see you myself. I should be in New York in about 2 hours and a half.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Harding. Where shall I meet you?
Where are you now?
At the doctor's home, 1232 West 82nd Street.
All right. You'll be at the corner of 82nd Street and Columbus Avenue in exactly 3 hours. I'll pick you up in a car, and you can tell me all about it while we drive around.
I'll be there, Mr. Harding.
Fine. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Chief, what's this all about? A woman calls from New York, mentions a Dr. Carthouse, and right away we're flying up there.
Peters, I don't know what it's about, but the fact that it concerns Dr. Carthouse is enough for me. Where he's involved, I'd fly from here to Moscow via the Antarctic if I had to.
Who the dickens is he?
The most brilliant and aggravating man I've ever dealt with. I'll tell you all about him on our flight up. Come on, let's get started.
You mean that Dr. Carthouse made all these contributions toward the improvement of radar, and I've never heard of him?
Well, that's not surprising, Peters. You were in Europe in 1942 and 43, the period the counter-spies dealt with him.
Well, I should at least know the name.
Oh, no. Dr. Carthouse is, shall we say, peculiar. He loathes publicity and despises government.
Our government?
Oh, he's broad-minded. Any government.
Mm.
He never officially worked for us.
But the results of his research, Chief, how did we get them?
Well, he brought them into us, but he never worked for us. We had to guard him without letting him know that he was being guarded and finance him through apparently private sources.
Must have been one headache to you. But tell me, why weren't his services just drafted for the government?
That's easier said than done. He refused point blank to work. Of course, we could have had him arrested, even shot, but that wouldn't have given us the benefit of his brain.
That's true, Dave. You can't force a man to think.
Yeah, particularly not Dr. Carthouse. He literally doesn't give a hoot for anything or anybody. He's not at all reticent about announcing that fact.
Unpleasant character.
Oh, no, to the contrary. Very pleasant. And very difficult to guard. Our biggest job was protecting him from being mobbed.
Mobbed?
Yes. You see, he has a hobby, not stamps or model planes or anything normal. He likes to make speeches.
What?
Yeah, one day he's in Union Square denouncing communism, and the next day he's at the Chamber of Commerce meeting denouncing capitalism.
Some character.
Dr. Carthouse is just against. Doesn't make any difference what. He's against it.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Well, don't, Peter, because you won't. I haven't the faintest idea what he's doing. But if he learns we're interested in it, protecting him, interfering, as he calls it, he'll stop dead. I know, because that's just what he did when he found out our agents were guarding him during the war. That's why I haven't kept an agent on him regularly. The New York office keeps a once-a-month check on him. That's all.
But just what is it that he'll stop doing, Chief? You don't even know yet.
Well, I know. If Dr. Semyon Carthouse is doing it, it's important. That's enough for me. Exactly what it is, we'll learn in New York when we meet Miss Gladys Phelps.
It's true, Mr. Harding. I saw it myself.
He shattered a piece of armor plate.
That's right, sir. 3/4 inches thick.
Chief, a thing like that.
Yes, I'm way ahead of you, Peters. Now, listen, Miss Phelps, did you tell anyone else you were calling us?
No, sir.
Chief, what are we waiting for? Why don't we just pick up this doctor and turn him over to the Department of Defense?
Peters, I know the man we're dealing with. He'll come to the government, all right, but when he's ready to and feels he's finished his research. And not a second before.
You will give him protection, though, won't you, Mr. Harding?
That I guarantee, starting right now.
We're back at 82nd Street, Chief.
All right, Miss Phelps. Now, you better get back to the doctor's house. We've been driving around for more than an hour.
All right, Mr. Hunt.
And don't worry. We'll have a guard over him every minute from now on.
Well, I've got a feeling I don't get any sleep tonight, Chief.
You don't, Peter. Stick here and keep your eye on that house she's going into until I send an agent to relieve you.
Okay.
Now, one thing you've got to make sure of, Peters, that Dr. Carthouse doesn't become suspicious of you.
I haven't lost a trail yet, Chief.
Well, if Carthouse finds out about you, we lose more than a trail. We lose the use of his brain, and that we can't pick up.
I'll be... Oh. Hey. The girl's coming back.
Well, what?
Mr. Harding, the laboratory. Dr. Carthouse, he's been murdered.
You are listening to the Case of the Spectrograph on Counter Spy. Tonight, the Big Show brings you the best in comedy, music, and drama with Tallulah Bankhead, Fred Allen, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Margaret Truman, Mindy Carson, Meredith Wilson, and many, many more. It's the Big Show, top Sunday listening design for the entire family. And speaking of families, tonight means another delightful adventure for the madcap Harris family and all their friends on the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. That's tonight over most of these NBC stations. Now, back to Counter Spy.
Well, Peters?
He's dead, all right. One shot in the temple.
Dr. Carthouse.
Now, please control yourself, Miss Phelps. We've got to find out who killed him, and you've got to help us.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Harding, I know.
The cinch that was one of the three financial backers Miss Phelps told us about, since they were the only ones who knew of the doctor's experiment.
Yes, looks like it.
Well, Peters, you take a look around the laboratory while I ask Miss Phelps some questions about this equipment here.
All right, sir.
Miss Phelps, is this the device Dr. Carthouse used in his experiment, the thing he called a sound box?
Yes, sir.
Know how to work it?
No, sir. No one but Dr. Carthouse did.
I see. Well, this machine over here with the endless roll of paper in it and the pencil marks on the paper, what's this?
Well, that's a spectrograph, Mr. Harding. It draws a picture of sound waves. Dr. Carthouse used it to make the sound patterns of his research visual.
Oh, yes, I've heard of the spectrograph.
That's funny.
What is, Miss Phelps?
That roll of paper in the spectrograph. I swear it was clean when I left here, but now it's all marked up.
All right, now hold it, Peters. You mean someone's used this spectrograph?
So it would seem.
Exactly how does this work? I'm a little vague on the details.
Well, that microphone on the desk is connected to the spectrograph.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak into it or make a noise in front of the microphone, that pencil apparatus on the spectrograph makes a line on the paper corresponding in length to the volume of the noise.
Oh, I understand.
Chief, that fits in with what I found.
What, Peter?
Look, these marks on the desk. Four of them. Like rubber grippers on the bottom of a portable typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
Then this indentation in the desk blotter. Circular, vague, could be a microphone stand. And here, a piece of recording tape.
What?
Was on the floor by the desk.
A tape recorder, huh? And that spectrograph in use.
What does it mean, Mr. Harding?
Well, the recorder's pretty obvious. Whoever killed Dr. Carthouse wanted his knowledge first. He knew the doctor kept nothing in writing, so he made him speak his piece and then shot him.
I go along with that, Mr. Harding.
Then we can assume that he talked into the microphone attached to the murderer's recorder and at the same time switched on his own microphone attached to that spectrograph.
Chief, you mean the whole story is in those undecipherable pencil lines on that roll of paper?
Well, I mean it's worth the trouble to find out what is on that roll of spectrograph paper, something we're going to do right now.
Hello?
Is this Commander Tackett of the Naval Radar Section?
And? What, who is this?
David Harding, United States counter-spies.
Counter-spies?
Yes, I'm sorry to bother you at 2:30 in the morning, Commander Tackett.
Shoot, Mr. Harding.
Well, now, in your radar and sonic research, you use an instrument known as the spectrograph, don't you?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Well, now, is there any method of reading the marks that are made by sound waves on the spectrograph tape?
Well, there are experts, yes, who can do it.
Well, where could I find such a man?
Well, if you give me a couple of days...
Oh, no, that's too long. Commander, isn't there any other way we can find out what a spectrograph tape says?
Well, I might be able to make it talk.
How?
We have the apparatus in our naval laboratory here in New York. If I had an enlarged photograph of the spectrograph tape...
You'll have it, Commander Tackett. If you'll go right down to the naval laboratory, I'll meet you there in 30 minutes.
Hello, Commander Tackett. The officer of the day told me you were here. I'm David Harding.
Hello, Mr. Harding. I must say you counter-spies certainly do things in a hurry.
Well, this is extremely urgent.
Oh, fine. Do you have the enlargement of the spectrograph?
Well, my assistant, Mr. Peters, is standing by at our counter-spy photo laboratory, and he'll rush right over with it just as soon as it's ready.
Good. Well, then I can take this time to show you how I may be able to make it done.
Yes, that's what I came for.
Well, we use this device here, Mr. Harding, a big electrically lighted transparent drum. It's a sort of talking drum.
Talking drum?
Yes, Mr. Harding. You see that bank of electric cells outside the drum, photoelectric cells?
Yes.
Well, when we place strips of black paper or tape on the drum and revolve it, the photoelectric beam is broken, and a series of vibrations are transmitted to a speaker for as long a time as the beam set up by the photoelectric cells is broken.
Oh, I see. Then, theoretically, you can make paper talk without the human voice even being involved in the process.
Well, that's just exactly what we've done, Mr. Harding.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'll show you this test pattern we keep handy.
Yes, please do.
Well, first, I'll start the motor that turns the lighted drum. There we are. Now, you see, the drum revolves, but nothing happens because it's completely transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the spectrogram reading, which we use for laboratory tests.
That's a hand-drawn picture of some spoken phrase, is that right?
Right, Mr. Hunting. And I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase of the saying. Now, here on this desk, this black tape cut up in odd shapes, it's an enlargement of this spectrogram already prepared in sections for mounting on the drum.
I see. Come on.
Well, I'll take this first section and mount it on the drum. So. Now, when I start the drum, listen to what happens when the part with the black tape on it passes over the photoelectric cells.
Mary had a... Mary had a... Mary had a...
That's remarkable.
Wait. I'll mount the rest of this prepared laboratory tape on the drum and... There we are. Now, listen.
Mary had a little lamb. His fleece was white as snow.
Why, that's astounding, Commander. Do you think that by cutting up the enlarged spectrogram my assistant brings, we'll be able to hear exactly what was said on it?
Well, I'm sure we will. Of course, the voices won't be recognized.
Well, that's not too important if we can only get them...
Hey, Mr. Harding. The enlarged spectrogram.
Good.
We had to enlarge it in sections. The roll of paper was so long.
What about this, Commander Daggett? Think you can work from this? Oh, my assistant, Mr. Peters.
Hello. Yes, I think so. It'll take time, though. See, I'll have to cut it up, and we can only get about 50 or 60 words on the drum at one time.
Well, let's start at the beginning and get going. I want to know what those black lines say just as soon as possible.
Mr. Harding, the first section's all set up and ready to go.
All right, turn it on. Let's hear what it says.
And pray that the voice of the murderer is on it.
All right, here goes.
A gun. That's right, Doctor. You're going to kill me, eh?
That prayer's answered.
Yes, unless you tell your data to this microphone I set up. If I do, you'll kill me anyway. So, right, but your knowledge will die with you, and you wouldn't like that. I have no choice. None.
Why the dickens doesn't he say the man's name?
All right. I'll tell all. Move the mic closer, Blake.
Blake?
I'll have to cut out more of the spectrogram.
Would you do that yourself, Commander, and have a confidential stenographer transcribe what the talking drum says? The rest, I'm sure, will be Dr. Carthouse telling the results of his sonic research.
All right, Mr. Hunting.
Chief Blake has a tape recording of that.
I know, and we'd better move fast if we want to stop it from getting out of the country. Come on, Peters, let's go.
Sergei, this is Blake.
I told you, Blake, no more money without results.
I've gotten results.
What?
Yes, they're on their way over to you by messenger now.
So?
You'll send the money right away? 100,000?
When I'm satisfied, the results are worth it.
Well, then satisfy yourself fast, because I need the money in a hurry. I'll be waiting to hear from you. Goodbye. Hello?
Congratulations, Blake.
Sergei, I was just going to call you.
It took me some time to get a tape recorder to play the tape which you sent me.
Well, do I get the money?
It's on its way over to you by messenger now. Half the sum.
Half?
You will get the rest when the scientists of my client have confirmed the value of what you sent.
Now, look, Sergei.
After all, I am not technically qualified to judge what I heard on that tape. So be satisfied with half for the present.
Our understanding was... Hold on, Sergei. There's someone at the door.
Most likely the messenger with your money. I'll take it and be happy. I'll be in touch with you in the future. Well, goodbye.
Now, Sergei! Sergei! Just a minute.
Package for Mr. Blake.
Yes, that's me.
Sign here.
All right. There, and here's a dollar for your trouble.
Just one out of the 50,000, Mr. Blake?
What?
You're not a very generous tipper.
What the devil is this? Who are you two?
United States counter-spies.
It isn't every man we run errands for, Mr. Blake. You should feel honored.
I don't understand. What's this all about?
The tape recording for Mr. Sergei Yakorov. We delivered it.
You delivered it?
After switching the one you sent for the one we made especially for the purpose.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's no use, Blake. We've known about you since early this morning.
The only reason we didn't pick you up sooner is that we wanted to see to whom you disposed of that recording that you forced Dr. Carthouse to dictate before you killed him.
Killed him?
That's right, Blake.
You see, Mr. Yakorov's government will waste a lot of time trying to make something out of the recording we substituted, a fact which won't make us unhappy. So, Blake...
Now, listen. I'll make a deal with you. I didn't kill Dr. Carthouse, but I'll tell you everything. All about Sergei. He's the one that did the killing.
Really?
Yes, I swear it. Now can we make a deal?
No, Blake. For two reasons. In the first place, we don't want to arrest Yakorov. Keeping a known foreign agent under observation will give us a lot more leads than we could get out of him in prison. And in the second place, Dr. Carthouse practically named you his murderer in a spectrogram recording he made.
So get your hat and coat and come along, Blake.
Well, doesn't seem to be anything else.
For me, too. Look out, Peter. He's got a gun. Oh, yes.
That was close, Chief.
Yes. Better call the ambulance, Peters. They can take care of Blake's last errand and see that he's delivered to his final resting place. Prison.
Tune in every week, same time, same station, to Counter Spy. Listen next week for the exciting Case of the Smuggled Schedule.
Next week, we shall reveal for the first time why a certain small package was given one of the biggest guards in counter spy memory, and how your counter spies went underground so that the wrong car would lead in the right direction. Listen to
The Case of the Smuggled Schedule on Counter Spy. Tonight's Counter Spy program originated in New York, was directed by Marks B. Loeb, dramatized by Palmer Thompson, and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer. Lionel Rico speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Tonight, The Big Show, radio's greatest spectacle, presents another broadcast in its NBC Sunday night series. Your hour and a half of comedy, music, and drama tonight includes Tallulah Bankhead, Fred Allen, Danny Thomas, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Mindy Carson, and many, many more. Theater Guild on the air tonight brings you the radio premiere of the hit musical Carousel, starring Patrice Munsell and Cornell Wilde.
That's the Relic Radio show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find this show and more at RelicRadio.com. You'll also find a link to our forum, our Shoutcast stream, and everything Relic Radio is at RelicRadio.com. You can email me at RelicRadio@gmail.com. You can follow this show on Twitter at Twitter.com/RelicRadio. What else? Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.